Welcome to Synthaholics. This is your host, David Duncan. This week we've got Aaron O'Brien.
Hey!
Holly Michelle's back.
Always. Trying. What up?
And our guest this week is Jin Baum again, the Klingon Pop Warrior. Welcome.
Nuknech.
So Laurel's just been hiding from you. So she came on the episode before we had you on, and then she hasn't shown her face since.
I know. Although Mary Chiba was promised us on Twitter that it's coming. Mama's coming.
Mama's coming back. Probably when they pull up the Enterprise, Mama will be coming.
Mother!
Sure.
Yeah.
Speaking of mothers, my mother is actually sitting in on this right now, so she's scared too.
She's scared too.
Does that mean I have to watch my mouth?
Oh boy.
You don't have to watch your mouth.
Well, welcome back, Jen. I'm so glad to have you back and have your take. We were talking before we started about Star Trek news. Things are coming around. You mentioned a kind of sad news of the Chicago type.
Well, yes. And actually, this affects other cities because other cities did have the show. But based on what I've been told, nobody's getting a Klingon Christmas Carol this year.
This is the saddest Christmas ever.
This is pretty sad, yeah.
Well, actually, it sounds like it's for a really cool reason. There's going to be, it sounds like there might be some rewrites happening and things like that. So, they're going to be, because I'm friends with Christopher Kittermostrom, who is one of the main writers of the show. And I was surprised. I was surprised, but not surprised, because I know that this is something that they've been talking about for a while. So,
Jen, I don't want to I know you when you go because you've been part of that show. Are you like the shining star that is it has gone far beyond what any of those the other performers have done? It seems like you are like so much more brighter filament. I'm not putting anybody down.
No, not I would not. I wouldn't say that at all. I've definitely of a lot of the people who've done this show, I think I've probably been the one who's thrown myself into it post
the Klingon role.
Like after leaving, I really, really, really embraced it. And everybody who really, it's a very interesting show. I went to school for theater. I've been doing theater for a really long time. And there's not a lot of shows that when the show is over, everyone who took part in it genuinely looks forward to going back and wants to be cast again and wants to take part in it again. And A Klingon Christmas Carol is really unique. It really creates a kind of family and a brotherhood. Like when you go to the trenches of learning a constructed language together, and donning, prosthetic foreheads. It's so funny. The They Might Be Giants song, came onto my shuffle not that long ago. Everybody wants to wear prosthetic foreheads on their heads. and I just laughed while I was in the car and that song came on. There's something about it that's really unique that really pulls people back into it. And so there were people that had been doing it for 5 years, 6 years. I was in the first 2 years and then just really wanted my holiday back.
Sure.
I stepped away and then I just didn't end up going back. But I really glommed onto it. I was really fascinated by it. I sort of came to fandom really backwards. I wasn't someone where my family watched Star Trek while I was growing up. I fell in love with this weird little show, and the Klingon fans and the fandom of the Star Trek fandom that made a show like that possible. And the next thing I knew, I was like a hardcore Trekker, and I'm like,
right.
You got a Klingon tattoo and everything.
Like, suddenly it just, I don't know what it was. It must have come at just the right time in my life. And like building cosplays and learning how to sew just because I love Star Trek, and then doing this crazy music project because I happen to have a weird skill set.
It's a great skill set, and it's really fascinating to me because I love the performing, but I don't think I could ever get the language part down. I took Italian and I was miserable at it. So
I'm always amazed. Like, I took 2 years of Spanish my freshman and sophomore year of high school, and I'm always amazed at how much I remember. That was Spanish I ever took, but I remember, like, and I sang in foreign languages because I was taking voice lessons and stuff like that. So it's like, I'm always amazed at just like what I remember, and I'm having trouble getting past the level one test, and everybody really wants me to pass the next test this coming summer. I have not been studying. I'm not going to lie.
You heard it here first, people.
I'm having too much fun.
Klingon language test.
There's three levels. There's levels 1, 2, and 3, and then there's technically an official grammarian test, as well. So, I passed level one, but that's now been like 2 years ago, and I don't think.
This is the Klingon Language Institute, right?
The KLI. I mean, one of our own is now the official translator. Actually, two or three of our own are official translators for Star Trek Discovery. So we know.
That's how you answer people when people say, why would you want to learn how to speak Klingon? Hey, you get to work on Star Trek if you know Klingon goodly enough.
Goodly.
I have a very particular set of skills. I will hunt you down, I will find you, and I will speak Klingon at you.
Robin happens to live in Vancouver, and they film in Canada.
Toronto.
But they have a couple of my friend Alan, who lives just over in Indianapolis. He's her second in command because she's actually a pilot and does like survey. She's like a survey pilot. And so as the days get longer, she has a job to do. And so if their filming runs over the summer or things like that, it's harder for her to answer questions when she's flying.
I just picture her flying over the surveying and just saying it all in Klingon.
Surprise me if she does. Robin is one of the most well-respected Klingon characters in the world. She's amazing.
what a crazy world we live in. I wanted everyone to know because we didn't like, I mean, we said who you are, but you can find all your work at the www.theklingonpopwarrior.com. You can go to Bandcamp. You have your albums. You can buy them there. And
iTunes.
You can get all that stuff, and they're great because they're, you know, she takes all these great songs and then she just translates them into Klingon and has a great, you know, performance with them, and it's so much fun. Like we were singing Mother, but she sings it in her Klingon. So
I think Metallica's one would be a great Klingon song since it's about battle. I would love to hear Klingon one.
I'm not gonna lie. We have the Warrior, the 1980s song by Patti Smith and Scandal.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's more than half recorded.
Nice.
And it was done. It was more than half recorded so that I could actually perform it live. Joe gave me a backing track so that I could travel. And he's on vacation right now. But last week I was like, hey, how about we finish that up? And so I'm hoping that we finish that up soon. And I have some other stuff in the hopper. So I'm hoping we're going to start working on some new material. And
I can't wait.
Exciting. Yeah.
So we'll see how it goes. I don't know how I want to release it this time. If I want to do a CD, if I just want to put it out online. So I have to think about that, and we'll kind of go from there. So
I just love it, and it's such a cool. I mean, you do such a great job of it, and it's just a cool way of just expressing art and, you know, playing tribute to songs that you like, you know. So
yeah, you said me, but I have only translated one song, potentially two. I actually was working on. I worked on a translation while I was sitting at a table at a convention in February. But I actually work with translators, even though I do know what I'm singing. I will never take full credit for my translation efforts. There are amazing people who help me out, members of the KLI and beyond. So, yeah.
But Jen, I appreciate you being humble, but it's your voice, and and without those lungs, I don't think they could do half of what you're doing. So, well. It's true. But we have one other.
I just wanted to say something real quick for those who didn't hear our first episode when we had the Klingon Pop Warrior on. When we first started the podcast, like weeks into it, you showed me the music video for Hit Chop. And you're like, isn't this funny? I'm like, yeah, this is pretty good. And then
it's the greatest thing in the world.
It was good. And then I remember when I spoke with Natalie Schlettman, who got us in touch with Jen, and it was really quick notice. It was like less than 48 hours before we recorded. I'm like, oh yeah, we've got Jen coming on. And he's like, who's that? I was like, you remember the Hit Chop video you showed me? That's her.
Yeah, I didn't know your name. I remember seeing it. It was like one of those things. Like, it's like, what? This is the craziest thing I've ever heard. It's like, somebody actually did this, and they made a video of it and everything. You know, so I loved it. So.
It was really awesome. Your reaction, because you were like, "Who's that?" And I'm like, "Oh yeah, it's the Hit Chop video." And he's like, "What? Really? You got that person? How'd you do that?" It was like, it was pretty awesome. It's
dedication.
Tight circles. The Klingon fandom is a very small knit family, and we all kind of know each other. Everybody sort of knows who's who within it, and who the people are who are out there just sort of like, you know, you got your college humor and your Klingon Gangnam style, but like as they're doing it to be funny, and they don't really care about the fandom on the other, you know. And then like you've got nerds like me who are just like steeped in it. So
right, it's great stuff.
It was really awesome, and we know Natalie because we're friends with Jericho Wilson, who's a cosplayer and does programming out in Washington.
Right.
And so she got us in touch with Natalie, then Natalie got us in touch with Jen, and then Jen got us in touch with Philip.
Yeah.
So we had Philip on there. So it's like it's this great community where we've gotten lots of guests and lots of interesting people on the show because of other people that we've known or followed and wrote her. Because I just followed her online and on Facebook and saw her wear a Star Trek dress to karaoke once, and I was like, please come on my show.
I love and actually the Hit Chop video is I always give a shout out whenever that gets mentioned to the Improvised Star Trek podcast. If you're unfamiliar, it's a hoot. And that video is all really that video kind of birthed the Klingon Pop Warrior project in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And it's because of the Improvised Star Trek podcast. It was one episode. It was only ever supposed to be background music. And then we were laughing so hard. Somebody was like, we can make a music video. and we did. And here I sit today. So
the rest is history.
Wonderful history. Absolutely. I love it. And it's great to have you. We got two little minor things to talk about. We were just talking before we started the show as well. The Deep Space Nine documentary, What We Left Behind, was bought by Shout. And they're going to be distributing this movie, and hopefully we get some theatrical releases other than, as Jen said, more than three cities. So.
Shout the clothes washer detergent?
Yes, that's it.
That's interesting. Yes. Interesting buy. It's interesting.
They got deep pockets, Dave.
I love it. Shout Studios is so funny because they do a lot of the old TV shows, like put them out on DVD. I think like Parker Lewis Can't Lose. I'm pretty sure they're the ones who like did that. And like I got Cop Rock on DVD not that long ago.
Cop Rock. Yeah, that's funny.
And I'm pretty sure that's a Shout Studio. They do a lot with old TV shows, so
That's nice.
Yeah.
Very cool. Yeah, so that's interesting. And Dave said this thing was kind of held back, but I guess you were saying because they had to do some remastering.
I mean, the way it was, they're updating the whole, all of the footage that they're using within it. They were able to, because of the crowdfunding, they were able to add more footage, I believe. And then they wanted to HD, like remaster it all in HD. So
remastering, yeah, that's yeah. Yeah, cool. So that's good news. And then lastly, this is my news. This is what I was excited about, that they're going to bring back the Scant on Star Trek Discovery. So we might see women or men dressed in a miniskirt. So,
or Siamese twin that's both a woman and a man in a Scant.
Well, you know, this is Star Trek. Anything can happen. So,
Saru in a Scant. Let's see this. Let's see those Kelpie legs.
Saru in a Scant. Oh, those bony legs.
Let's get Laurel in a Scant too.
That I love the uniforms they have that are pants.
Oh my god! And you know, I'm just gonna say it now, and I'll probably say it again multiple times later. The Discovery uniforms do beautiful, beautiful things.
They do.
The butts
of
men of Starfleet. And really, they do great things for everybody's butt. But
Captain Tight Pants.
But holy moly, Anson Mount's booty.
Is it the uniform or is it Anson Mount? We don't know.
It's probably,
I don't know. Yeah, it's probably a little bit of both. It's very chicken, you know, chicken and the egg.
It's probably Lorca's butt. The CGI Lorca's butt on top of it.
But yeah, him and Shahzad Latif and, I mean, like, everybody's booty. They just look, they look good in those uniforms.
Booty, 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 booty. Look at that booty.
They definitely spent some time on that. They did a matrix of study on how to cut the cloth, right?
So in the first episode, they said the Enterprise got the new uniforms. Why don't the admirals have the new uniforms? Why does no one have the new uniforms but Enterprise? And if they're away on their 5-year mission, how did they get the new uniforms if they're very far away?
But they're not very far away. They're in, like, dry dock.
No. They got the new uniforms because they had them in the cage, which was a couple years before. So they got the uniforms are 2 years old, and they're new, but the admirals don't have them yet.
I don't know.
Why?
Maybe different divisions. Maybe you're like an elite division and not an elite division. As we learn, the Enterprise is the best of the best.
The breast of the breast. Let's do it, guys.
Simply the best. So, should we get into
all the rest?
Love it.
Yes, sir.
So,
let's do it.
Yeah, we got this Star Trek Discovery Project Daedalus. This is episode 9, season 2, and aired March 14th, 2019. And we start off with Discovery is kind of hanging back in the shadows behind a planet somewhere.
Great shot of Discovery.
It was a beautiful shot of Discovery.
It's
was
about
like, wow.
Time we get some good spaceship shots.
Yeah. And we got Admiral Cornwell's shuttle coming in. And then we get a whole discussion how she doesn't – well, Pike doesn't trust Section 31, and she pretty much agrees. And they have –
she was part of Section 31. She was hanging out on Leyland's ship. I don't understand.
I thought she was in maybe cahoots.
She was giving him orders.
Well, usually the admirals are the ones who are running Section 31 in the background. Why is she all of a sudden not?
Select admirals.
Hologram admirals run Section 31.
I was just happy to see Admiral Cornwell come back. Like, just, if I'm just putting,
You were sad to see her come back?
No, I was thrilled. I was glad.
Oh, okay.
Glad.
Glad, okay. So she comes back and they're kind of, I guess they have mutual concern about Section 31 now, because before she was kind of towing the Section 31 line. But she wants to have a private meeting with Spock, and he brings her up to speed that he believes that Ash Tyler sabotaged Discovery spore drive. And so that's where it is there. And then next we have Cornwell giving Spock a lie detector test. And we get basically, she says, well, whatever he's saying, he believes in it, that he did not kill those people at the Starfleet medical facility.
And Michael vouches for
it. But this is what we can see. Like, we have footage, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, we have footage. It's not doctored.
Right.
Can't be doctored.
No, it is exactly doctored because the doctor's a hologram.
Or we have.
Are you sure, doctor?
But don't take our word for it.
Doctor.
Well, you're so sure about it that you know something is going to. Yeah. Not bringing it up and being so adamant about it.
Back and bite
them in the butt later.
Absolutely.
Those nice tight butts and those tight pants. We're going to say butt a lot, I think, tonight.
I'm getting to believe that Cornwell probably is not maybe the best in judgment making.
Sleeping with Nira Lorca. Yeah, that's a great judgment call.
She just has like a very long history of making the wrong calls. So, but to be fair, most admirals do. So
it's pretty much the Starfleet admiral thing. Like they have to be like pawns to be bad guys. Can't we get a good, smart, honest admiral one day?
We had Kirk.
Oh, yes, but he got demoted back to captain.
Captain, that's how it goes. Like I said, she gives Spock the test, and he's like not telling a lie, apparently. I do love how Burnham kind of walks in and goes, I can vouch. He's not telling a lie. He's like, why should I believe you?
Old Talosians and stuff.
I just thought it was weird. Like, what? She just walked right in and started, like, butt into the whole thing.
It's not weird.
She was just being brazen.
It's the Michael Burnham show.
It's the Michael Burnham show.
It directly involves her brother, who she cares very much about. It's
But
fine.
If you look at the way the show's written, it's the Michael Burnham show, not Star Trek Discovery.
Yeah. Well,
she's at the center of everything, just like Arium said, and just like I think Michael's the Red Angel.
Yeah, I'm actually coming to your way of thinking. I'm coming around to that. So we get the whole thing how and Spock brings out that this Red Angel threat is going to get rid of all sentient life. Yeah, so that means everything's going to be brought, you know, gone. So
why did it reach out to me? Because your sister's trying to connect with you, even though you've been a giant dick to her, Spock.
Yeah,
she's trying to connect with you through time.
And I like how, she brings out, like, Burnham goes, like, he's saying, like, oh, no, Cornwell says that. Well, you're just saying that because you're his brother.
Not by blood.
He's like, not by blood.
She's going to go back in time and sleep with Amanda's great-great-grandfather so that Amanda can be Spock's mom and be related to Spock.
Wow, that's taking a stretch.
Well, the way she looked at him whenever – she's the Red Angel. She can do whatever she wants. She can be her own great-grandmother's sister-in-law, brother-in-law, sister, whatever she needs to be so that they can be related by blood. She looked really shocked, so she's going to do it. She's going to do it.
She's going to do it.
All right, Dave. Well, that's some pretty crazy ideas there. But anyways –
it makes perfect sense. It all lines up. It's the Michael Burnham show.
So
I wouldn't say perfect sense, David.
It makes sense in your world.
It's the only world.
So anyways, then we have a kind of a Cornwell's talking with the staff, and she talks about – it's basically saying that, yeah, Spock says the truth, but I got this footage that can't be – that's not altered.
It's totally doctored.
And it shows Spock shooting everyone with a phaser. Then we get the whole thing. We get
vaporized, though. That'd be great.
I know. That would have been cool. We get this clue that Section 31 has this thing called Control, which is sort of like a AI, and it accepts all this information and data that the Federation feeds it. And all of a sudden, it stopped taking Admiral Cornwell's data. And then she says
data is irrelevant.
She thinks it's the Vulcan Admiral Batar. And she says, is a logic extremist.
How is a logic extremist in the Federation at all?
This makes
no sense.
I don't understand how logic extremists got into that. So
they're so racist. Wouldn't they have bombed Section 31?
I mean, I feel like maybe, like anything, maybe that became her over time. She became more and more, the more she was surrounded by humans, maybe. I don't know. I'm just throwing that out.
But ideology is basically like suicide bomber type stuff. So why is she still in the Federation? Why is she still alive?
Maybe she's like a sympathizer. She's not like, you know, not a throw a bomb through a window.
Well, sympathizers aren't really good either.
Isn't she like, but is she part of Section 31? I kind of got the impression that she was very much like a part of Section 31.
Oh, yeah.
No,
yeah.
She's a popsicle.
You're not there yet.
We're not there
she's
yet.
She's a hologram.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
She was a hologram every time we saw her.
But we do find – so Cornwell is basically saying we have to go to Section 31's base and try to find out what's going on and get basically take down Section 31.
Right.
Which sounds completely insane.
Secret agent, man.
Yeah.
Did I miss something where like the last time we saw her, I thought she was literally giving commands to – what's his name? Leland?
Leland, yeah.
And now she's like, we need to take them down. I was like, what did I miss?
Yeah. Well,
that's what I said like 10 minutes ago.
They need to take them down because she can't get into their databases anymore.
Yeah, but where? Right.
She can't log in.
What is it that happened? Because, you guys didn't notice anything that I missed, right? Like, nothing.
No, I literally said the same thing a few minutes ago. Like, I thought she was Section 31. Why is she now acting like she's not? It didn't. There's no C. I mean, there's no B between this A and C connection.
I can theorize that, but let's get to the end of it and we'll get into it. So yeah, so like I said, they're going to try to storm the Bastille and they're going to go to Section 31 headquarters. So that's the plan right there. And then we jump from there to Arium. We get a whole story about Arium, things that we did not know. So she is in her quarters and she's reviewing memories, deleting some things that doesn't need to be remembered, and then she's remembering
she saw Captain
certain
Pike's butt and wanted to forget it.
It's like
delete.
Shut your face.
I don't think she'd want.
Maybe
Arium
doesn't swing that way.
Did you see her husband?
Yeah,
but she got turned into a robot, so it doesn't work that way anymore.
Oh,
well,
okay.
She probably.
Yeah, well,
I'm not going to argue that point.
I love that. That
and not mutually exclusive.
I'm not saying that. I'm just not arguing.
Now
what did you love, Jen?
Deal is. I love that we just know what her, we know
that she was once human.
She was once human. We kind of start to understand who this like random robot that like, you know, is not actually a robot. There's human under there.
Robot.
I really liked that too, because she was a fascinating character to me from the get-go.
Like, what is that on the bridge?
I was dying to know more about her. So
why
I'm
are we talking about this person?
I honestly don't know.
Yeah, she does seem like a pretty cool character. So, yeah, like you said, that we do find out that she had a fiance and there's a video she goes over where they're walking on the beach and they're all excited that they're going to visit somebody and they're going on a shuttlecraft.
First day married. Mm-hmm. And it was their last day together.
Yes. And so apparently there was some kind of shuttlecraft accident and apparently he didn't make it, but she did. But then she was put together as a robot.
You know, what's funny.
Cybernetically enhanced humans.
Yes.
There's a difference between a robot.
Robot.
Well, silly Tilly.
What's kind of funny is I wonder if my pastor watches Star Trek, because he's opened up the sermon talking about people who got horribly died or something that happened like right after they got married. He had a couple of like things he mentioned this morning. I was like, huh, what if he watched Star Trek this week?
Wow, that's morbid, pastor.
Yeah, it started off on a huge downer. I was like, wow, that's kind of sad.
Interesting for a pastor.
Talking about Job. So
before we like end up moving on to the next scene, I really liked watching her and what she chose to keep.
Yeah.
You know, just like a smile from her friend and, you know, and things like that were really telling about that character. Like, it was very, the fact that she has to do that every week, you know, and kind of what that means is really telling, and then what stays and what goes. I thought that was
Lovely. That was great. And then Tilly goes, comes in, and she says, "Jokes, you better save every single moment with her." And yeah. And Ariam goes, "Yeah, those are the
first to go."
So
it was really good banter.
Yeah, I like that immediately. So Tilly makes all things good. So then we jump down to engineering, and Stamets is working on the spore drive, and he's like, "You're okay." And Spock and Michael Burnham are there,
staring intently at each other.
Just, yeah, not doing anything. And they need to, Stamets says, you need to think louder.
I'm not used to talking to myself with an audience, so you guys need to start talking or get out. That's what he says.
Well, and there's this great back and forth between Spock and Michael. And basically, like, why did the angel choose you? What do you have that's special that other people don't have? And Dave is going into what you believe that Michael must be the Red Angel. So that's the only thing I could possibly lead to for this. Right. I mean, it's becoming really like,
so many crumbs. Like, Discovery has been terrible with like
the crumbs.
Yeah. They don't drop crumbs. They drop the entire cookie. I mean, they did it with Ash and Vok, and they did it with Lorca being evil. Like, it's just, they just dropped the whole cookie. Like, there's not much subtle to it, unfortunately.
Right. And then they bring into they just go into this back and forth of, you know, why, you know, and Spock doesn't seem to be very cooperative, period.
He's brooding.
More argumentative, which is foreign to the Spock I know. So not that Spock would never argue.
My mom said the same thing. She was like, this is really emotional and I can't take this seriously.
Though, because you get a reason for that later on in the episode.
Yeah.
You do, but I still don't buy the Vulcan emotions.
Mom disagrees.
I don't buy it either. And Kaylee, my fiance, she loves the original series because she loves Spock, because Spock fixes all of Kirk's mistakes, and she can't stand Spock in Discovery because he's being so anti-Spock.
But is what's happening right now going to make him the Spock that we do know? Because that's
sound. Maybe.
Exactly. Well, it's what just, my mother said, actually.
I don't know, because he's so like, he like rubbed the Klingon mutiny thing in her face and the mutiny itself. And then later on, Spock's like, we've never had a mutineer. Like, he seems so vicious now. It's like, why would he not bring that up again later?
Yeah,
it was scrubbed from the record. And
it was scrubbed, but he threw it in her face viciously this episode. So he's not one, he doesn't seem like one to forget.
He likes his emotions, okay?
Yes.
I'm embracing them.
For the first time, I like it.
I don't like being angry.
I like the first time I pun fart too, but you know.
Who doesn't? Who doesn't?
You picked a plant that is dead. That was the is dead.
So yeah, so we get that, and then Stamets tells them that maybe they can think loudly someplace else. So he kicks him out. Say it again. I'm sorry, I missed it.
I said end scene.
End scene. Yes. Then on the bridge, we got Ariam and Tilly, and they're trying to decrypt the code, all this stuff that's hidden, that they're trying to figure out what supposed Ash Tyler had done. And
for cybernetics.
Yes, they got the cybernetics. So she's and she makes joke. She makes joke. The robot joke. We get the robot joke, which is great. Robot
like from Futurama.
Yeah,
he's a robot.
Row your bit gently down the stream.
I love it. So, and as they're working, Tilly is working side by side, and then she gets pulled away for a moment, and then she says, it looks like you've done nothing. So all the work that she was doing to encrypt it seemed like something changed, and we do notice that Ariam's got the three red flashing things in her eyes. All of a sudden they take over,
Xbox,
and she's
Red Ring of Death.
Yeah. Yeah. And she starts setting up Data to send it and stuff like that. So we're not sure yet what she's doing. We find out later, but, so when we get, get to Section 31 headquarters, and then they're, the headquarters surrounded by mines, and, Pike's like, well, why would you use mines? These aren't used for the Federation. And, And then
like outlawed or
I don't understand why this is a thing, because I looked it up specifically because I know mines were mentioned in Deep Space Nine. Mines are also used in Next Gen, so I guess they decided mines are okay pretty shortly after this.
Yeah, you know.
Mines are great.
Giving up our values in the name of security is to lose the battle in advance.
I love him.
Yeah.
Pike is great.
I agree with Pike completely, but she was, and she makes a good point. Point says we're under attack by the Klingons. They got cloaking devices, and sometimes in war you have to make a terrible choice. And like you said, losing the battle in advance statement, and that's O'Brien when
Brian made the most vicious mines, the cloaked self-replicating mines.
It's a touch of the Irish.
On St. Patrick's Day, we got to mention the wonderful mine Steve O'Brien made high on his Irish synthahol.
Yes, right.
I raised my glass of very not synthahol.
Yes. and then Cornwell brings up that Enterprise set out the war because she wanted the best of Starfleet to survive if they lost the Klingons. I'm like, well, that's a nice idea. It's like a message in a bottle kind of thing. But,
and Pike backs down very meekly. He's like, oh, thanks for saying nice things about me.
Thanks.
You could have mentioned my butt, but you know.
My butt would have been fine.
I'm pretty sure we got multiple butt shots in that scene.
You know, I don't actually recall seeing his butt.
I actually do recall. Now that we've been talking about his butt, I very clearly remember Pike's butt. A couple
really good side shots.
Yes.
One where the camera like pans behind the whole group and you get like Cornwall's butt.
There's nothing to write home about that, but yeah, you see his pretty much. Now, you know what I think it is? I think it's the pants, but also it's the cut of the shirt, because it's basically right where belt line is. It doesn't go anywhere below it, so you get
full shot.
You get good butt.
Cuppage.
I don't know. I'm gonna have to rewatch and see if I pick up on that, because I didn't notice any of this.
Whatever.
I guarantee you will like it.
Jonathan Frakes, actually.
Get the lube.
It was Jonathan Frakes.
I know.
It was like
let me look at hands.
Turn to the left when you do that. Make sure you stretch your legs a certain way.
Do the Riker maneuver. Put your leg up so it accentuates your butt.
Yeah. But he did an episode recently, and I swear there was one where it was just like there were people walking into the frames constantly, and it was just like full blown, like the whole episode. And I was like, this episode is great.
Butt Trek, the final frontier. Yeah,
pretty much.
We do love our Jonathan Frakes. So then we jump to Burnham takes Spock to her quarters, and this is where you're going to play three-dimensional chess, you know, and Spock's like, I have to save the entire galaxy. And you want me
to play a children's game?
Yes. So anyways, we get these just bickering back and forth between Burnham and Spock, and Spock says that he considers Burnham arrogant.
You should have been there for my first punt far, and you weren't.
Boy, you're just stuck on that, Dave.
Yes.
That's what Game of Thrones is for. If you want...
No, start... I wanted the Game of Thrones thing, because what we actually got last week's episode was entirely disappointing. It was so cliche and overdone, I was very upset. I wanted something more scandalous. That way she's actually upset. What she did, she shouldn't be that upset about telling her parents about.
Well, yeah. So, yeah, just so you know, Jen,
hey, Holly advocated this, too. It's not just me.
I mean, I know.
Yeah.
No, but I just want to say that... what was that?
Sorry.
Dirty.
Dave wanted to see Games of Thrones Star Trek.
Game of Thrones in space. This is all I've been wanting from Star Trek Discovery ever since they announced it. Game of Thrones in space. Please, people.
Okay.
So, but we never got that. So I think, especially with the Klingon war, we thought we were going to see some crazy violence. But
and maybe
we saw a little bit.
The Ash torture was a little bit gruesome for Star Trek, but that was it, and that was disappointing.
We got some Klingon boobies.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Klingon boobies never had prosthetics on them before. Lursa and Beator, give me more of that.
Moving on.
So
hey, we were on ass for a long time. This is just a real quick thing on boobs. We don't have to move on this quick. Come on.
So we get back to Arium's going through the sphere database in the science area. In this, we have an exchange between the security chief, Nan, and saying that Tilly's looking for her. And then we definitely find out that she is a Bizarrian. And yes, right. And she, those cybernetics help her breathe.
Yeah.
Which we will find out more later. Yeah. And but Nan, you can see, is kind of suspicious of her. And then she does this weird thing where Arium turns around and then she seems kind of lost for a moment. And then she goes back to the bridge. So like Nan's like, what's going on with this chick? I don't know. So she's definitely a little freaked out. And she's suspicious. So when she goes to the bridge, Tilly and Arium are going to start working together on that code. And she asks her not to leave her side, just to stay with her the whole time.
I feel like it's a cry for help.
Arium realized something wasn't right with herself. You can tell. She's like, I keep losing time.
She should have said, no matter what, don't leave my side. No matter what I say later, don't leave my side. No,
but that always causes problems later on.
If you want to see the great scene of that, watch Young Frankenstein, where he locks him in the room with the monster. Whatever I do, don't open this door. That's great. Exactly. And when he closes the door, he says, let me out of here.
Let me out.
Yeah.
I was joking.
Something like, don't leave my side. Merits context.
Yes.
Or what?
Context is for kings.
I feel like at that point, that was the first time that she acknowledged that something was wrong with her, so I wasn't entirely surprised that she didn't add another caveat to that, because she's like, I feel like, what would she say? Like, I don't want you to leave my side because something seems, I feel off, like, but how, you know, and like, how would Tilly know? And, you know, so
I think...
But
I think you're absolutely right, because I had the same thought. I was like, well, it didn't really make sense for her character to overreact about it, but I think if they had her say, keep an eye on me, that would have been better than stay by my side.
Yeah.
And then but it did help that she didn't say keep an eye on me, and then that officer of Captain Pike's did keep an eye on her and was like watching from the shadows.
Well, and Tilly could tell that her friend was off. Like, you know, but poor Arium. It's not going to get any better before we're done.
Yes, it won't. And so they get out of warp and they're at Section 31's base. And like we said before, this was a Section 31's base was an old penal colony like 100 years ago, surrounded by mines. Cornwell's basically like, you gotta go in without your shields because the mines are attracted to them. Mm-hmm. So they gotta go in through it.
I'm thinking, okay, Cornwell, why are you here?
Yeah, why do we trust you?
Like, they don't know not to trust you, but I don't trust you.
Yeah, I know. You start to worry. I actually, at that point, I was a little worried. Like, do we really want to trust this woman?
Right.
Maybe.
And then he's like, do you see my face?
Too.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Then we jump back to quarters of Burnham and Spock playing chess. We have this just huge argument between the two about knowing who Sarek is and what Sarek's like. And playing favorites.
It's like sibling rivalry.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it's really what it was. Sibling rivalry 101.
Yeah, and we come basically at Spock was saying, like, the logic extremist hated me, Spock being, a half Vulcan, half Vulcan, half
human abomination. Half
human. They're not after you. They were never after you. It's just, it's only you who, you know, wanted to make yourself into something that's, I don't know if she was trying to say make her more important.
That was what Spock says, you're being dramatic.
Yeah.
I love the line. I actually, it's in my notes. your presence was beside the point was one of the things that he said. And then it is easier for you to shoulder burden than to face unimaginable grief.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And that was, yeah, that line I felt was sort of the culmination of that whole scene.
Well, mm-hmm. I feel like it's a culmination of how the fans, I feel like Spock is a little bit, the fans a little bit like Michael just takes too much on herself and she needs to like breathe a little bit.
Well, that's kind of like
some of the fans.
That's kind of like the behavior of a martyr, somebody who just deals and doesn't complain, but
is dying inside.
They ignore their personal struggles and don't face them.
Well, she totally is a martyr. She took full responsibility for the Klingon War when it wasn't really all her fault.
Right. Well, the Federation was saying, well, it's all your fault.
Right. No. She's like, she didn't argue or she didn't like, you know, she took her court martial and like, just like she said, no, it was all me. Like she didn't explain anything.
Yeah.
She was very martyrdom-ish.
Because she at that point was judging herself.
Yeah.
Well she always does. And this is what Spock is saying.
Right. Well, and Spock had that other great line that could have just as well been about her as himself when he says failure is liberating. And mm-hmm. for the first time, I enjoy expressing emotion.
Right.
And, you know, and like, and that really could be just as much aimed at her as it is him, you know, him sort of be, you know, saying that for the first time in his life, he feels this way. And he's like, you know, she is full human and has had the ability to fail. And she's placed so much on herself as a, you know, as an individual. And, you know, he's like, it's okay to suck sometimes.
Yeah.
Well, right. I mean, I think he's definitely putting it on her because the entire scene was him pissing her off just to do it, to get a reaction out of her. And so,
but no, he was proving a point. It was illogical. Yeah, he was,
He was still trying to provoke her, and by expressing emotion and being like angry is just another way to provoke her.
He did provoke her.
I mean, it was on purpose.
Everything he did was to provoke her, I think. I think he was in control the entire time. He acted angry just to provoke her more.
That's an interesting theory, and this discussion made me think that maybe Spock knows that Michael's the Red Angel and he has to provoke her.
There you go.
This is also push her into action or whatever.
Yes. Sure. Yeah. I don't know. That's a thought. But we get the scene where Spock smashes the 3D set and crumbles the ground.
Crappy 3D printed pieces all over the floor.
So I thought about 3D printed chess as well. But a good point to make is that Michael pushed Spock to play chess. And he didn't want to play chess. And then once he finally did play chess, that's when he began to push Michael. So, mm-hmm. He just played chess. Chess is a mind game.
Right.
Chess is a mind game.
Yeah.
But he was throwing away pieces and stuff like that.
Yeah. Really.
And not so taking pieces.
He did not play to win.
He was playing
not
to provoke
the physical
her.
Game, but the mental chess that is chess.
Yes.
Yes.
And she pretty was, meta.
And she was not realizing it.
Like, keep drinking. I like where you're going.
It's a very good point. And he smashed the thing and he storms off basically. And Pike calls Burnham to the bridge. She's like, oh, I'm on my way.
I loved her.
Oh, that moment where she
that
collects.
That moment where she collects herself.
On the bridge?
No, in her room before she responds to her
badge. My favorite thing was when she got on the bridge and you could see, like, even Saru was like, are you all right? You know, he's like, I'm fine. And and she gets on to her station and I was thinking about this is what Michael Burnham does. She, whatever she has, she like pushes whatever emotion or insanity going in her life and she just focuses on the work.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool, but probably not healthy. So,
yeah. Well, as we've seen, it's not healthy.
Yes.
And if she becomes the Red Angel, it's really not healthy.
Things are going well.
I gotta become Spock's great great grandmother.
I'm my own grandpa.
I'm my own stepbrother's grandma.
Yes. So
I don't know about this theory, but yeah.
That's a crazy.
It's my most solid theory yet.
It's solid.
You've had better theories than that.
I know. I'm joking.
So they're going to go. They're going to the minefield, and when they're going in, they get problems with the blade mines.
Oh my god, you guys!
It's the buzz droids.
Yeah,
buzz droids. Episode 3.
Yeah.
My note here is Detmer is a goddamn flying diva. Nice. And then all caps. Blade mines. I don't really know what that means. I wasn't drunk when I was typing it, but I think I was really amused by the blade mines.
That's blade mines. I and the other one I thought was cool was blackout mines.
Blackout
that's
mines.
Although a cool idea that makes your navigational sensors kind of black out on you.
Look, wow. I have a degree in theater, so I don't really know shit from shit about anything.
Shit from Sashino, whatever that saying goes.
It's scientific.
But yeah, my favorite moment, and when I say favorite moment, it was my "Are you kidding me?" moment. Was sensors say the ship is upside down, and I was like, "Are you fucking kidding me? You are in space.
There's no upside down.
There's no up or down.
And you have there is gravity stuff on your ship, so you do not know. You do not know. I was really angry about that.
Well,
I
was, they were. She was,
you know,
probably.
That's a good point. I did not pick up on. Well,
the thing is, I mean, you can be upside down because, I mean, Starfleet probably flies at Z-axis 180, and she was probably at Z-axis negative 180. So she was just probably reading her Z-axis, and I'm like, well, we usually fly at Z-axis 180, and it says negative 180, so we must be upside down.
No.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it's.
I guess. I don't know. I just found that. I said it the night we were watching it. I was like, what?
The only thing I'm going to say in contrast to that, Jen, is that maybe there's some kind of like I don't know, you know, like not nautical code, but ship code.
Sure.
Where you have to align your ship a certain way. So this is the right side up of the ship. That's why ships never look, you know, sideways or whatever when they run into each other later on, you know.
That's the thing. I mean, because in Star Trek, they've always been side. You always see ships, they fly in the same axis. And I'm sure she's just reading the axis screen. And that's why Discovery Season 1, Episode 1 was kind of great, because Klingons flew at a different axis because that was their zeroed-out axis, you know.
Like I said, I'm sure there's a perfectly logical explanation for it, but
that we
I'm,
don't have.
Like, I was just like, "You've got to be kidding me!" And yeah. Even my husband, like when I said it, he goes, "You're right," and I'm like, yeah. "Thank you,
thank you, dear." So
upside down doesn't matter in space, but they might be upside down from Federation standard flying procedure.
Maybe, possibly. Possibly. She's like, fine. So during this time, Arium tells Tilly to go help them. They need your help. I got this. Don't worry about it. And she's like, are you sure? You told me a statement. Eh, go. So she goes, and Nan just is lurking in the shadows watching Arium.
But
so.
Doesn't do anything.
Well, she's just getting information.
This was the moment where I actually wrote down at the time because I couldn't for the life of me remember. I wrote WTF is her actual job. Because I couldn't remember what, why was she even, who is she, what is she doing on the bridge?
She's a security officer. She's a security officer.
I looked it up afterward. I actually, in parentheses, I was like, incidentally, it's chief of security. time I'm watching it going, what are you doing besides just like lurking behind a like wall? Like,
and why does no one notice that you're lurking?
Nobody notices. Nobody's saying anything. I understand they're going through a minefield right now, and it's
secret
a little bit
agent Nun. Secret agent Nun.
Yeah, they're going through a freaking minefield. Do you not have something better you could be doing with your time right now? Like,
yeah, right.
Yeah, watching Arium.
It would be funny if one of the other bridge, you know, minor bridge people can go, "Hey, Nan, what are you doing back here?"
The communications officer who has nothing to do.
Bryce, yeah,
right.
Yeah, I know it'd be funny. Like I said, Tilly goes away, and then Arium's back to the whole, you know, three lights in the eyes, and she's like sending.
Shit.
Yeah, she's sending.
You hear the dial-up modem sound.
Yeah.
She's like trying to connect to the thing and download it.
And
well,
And at this point, they're in trouble with the mines, and Burnham is reminded of what Spock was talking about in the chess game, and says, "So the mines are controlled by computer." And says, "We should do randomness and chaos." So they start throwing out, you know, all these different maneuver that would confuse the mines, and it actually has different people call out the orders too. So it's not one person. So, which is interesting. Seems like a common thing to throw off a computer.
He's including the rest of the crew, which is kind of nice.
Yep.
It's nice. It's nice of them. The communications they get from Admiral Pitar, Section 31, and is finally open when they get through the mine area. And
the mines stop as soon as Arium's done downloading.
Yes.
Yeah. Yep.
She's controlling them.
I also have a note here that no one expresses relief better than OO.
she's like, ah.
The look on her face, Owokushan, is that how you say her name? Yeah,
we've been struggling with her name, too.
Just call her Joanna, because that's the easy way, the easy part of the name.
Owo, because that's what they called her, I think, in that episode when they went to the planet.
Yes.
Her relief face was my favorite.
So I remember last time you were saying Detmer's got the best oh shit face. So you've got the one with the oh shit face and the other one with the relief face.
Very Detmer does have a great oh shit face. She's always like, what the fuck?
I think the monocle around her eye really helps with that too.
It does. Right. It does, but it is a great
face. Cybernetics!
Cybernetic monocle! Woo!
So they get in contact with Admiral Pitar and
Admiral Batak.
Batak. And
story.
Basically saying that Discovery is a fugitive vessel and that you're going to basically surrender yourself, kind of thing. And you know, they're like, yeah, I don't think that's going to happen.
And glorious ass shots.
And glorious. Glorious ass shots.
All shot from behind.
We didn't get to see Patak's ass.
No, we don't. Well, she's frozen. Cold. Frozen.
She's a cold, hard bitch. Wait, no, sorry.
Yes.
The whole bridge is shot. There's a shot straight from behind. And I was like, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Jonathan Franks. The ass god smile upon us, but not the boob gods.
Mm. thank God.
No.
Hey, that's, now.
You're thinking of the butt guy.
Yeah.
I will argue that cleavage looks like butt, so suck it.
All right. Cleavage.
Chest butt.
Chest butt.
Exactly.
Yeah, so we get the whole
Come
thing.
Come back from that, Aaron.
I don't. I have to keep pushing forward, Holly. That's all I can do.
I like both a lot, actually.
I got one tool in my tool belt, and that's just reading the script.
Continue going. Just trudge on.
Everyone likes stepping over.
Yes. So anyways. It's a kind of funny thing where Pike in Cornwall is basically like, after they have this kind of like Pitar kind of give him a dress down that, yeah, you're basically going to surrender yourself. And Pike's like, yeah, we're not doing that. What made you think I was going to? So
what about the look on my face that I was going to change my mind?
Yeah. Yeah. I thought that was great. Anyways. So
like Pike.
Yeah. Pike's awesome. He's got to have his own show.
I want Pike to have his own show, or like show up as a cameo bunch in the Section 31 show.
Wait a second. Didn't you just say like 2 weeks ago that you wanted to like, every season have like a captain one-off where like you were only captain for one series and the next season you got a new captain?
Well, no, that's my prediction for how Discovery will go. That's not my desire. That's my prediction.
I think we were saying, I don't know, was it with Guy? I can't remember Guy Davis. We were talking about that it would be great to have like a six or, you know, a short episode of, Stewart was saying that from Trek Yards was saying that it would be great to do that. It was like have like a six or five episode,
like a mini series at least.
Pike and Spock, you know, short, you know, that'd be great. Those guys are awesome. Anyways, yeah, so they form a landing party, and we get Michael, of course, and then we get Arium and Non. I was going to say Khan.
Secret Agent Non. Yes.
Secret Agent Non. So, and then back in engineering, Stamets is working on the spore drive, some conduit, and everything goes down when he messes it up. And Spock helps him with it. And Spock and him trade some words back and forth about
love and relationships.
About everyone's relationships, you know, like basically, yeah, he even talks about Culber. And I'm like, how did you even know Culber?
How did you know? Like, does everyone talk about Culber and Stamets behind his back? Like, what's going on?
It's like great. It's like everyone's like rumors going around or whatever.
It's Spock. He's attuned and astute, and
he's been in the network.
Yeah. He's seen. You know, he's already seen time outside of like linear space. You know, he knows. He's Spock.
Because he's amazing.
He's amazing.
Vulcans are magic. They just know things.
It's true. Spock also brings out that Stamets has traveled the network so many times that maybe he doesn't need to have the ship with a...
Put down your Google Maps. Do it yourself.
Yeah, you know, trust the Force, Spock. Turn off the computer kind of thing.
Turn off the computer, Spock.
Yeah. Or should I say Luke? Yeah. Luke, trust your instincts.
You shot womp rats before.
You shot them before. It's fine. Which was interesting. So Stamets now might be able to do the mycelium network without anything.
Well, the thing is, they said like their navigation system was garbage anyway in season one. That's why they had to have the physical live component. So I'm not sure why they're relying on the thing that's so incomplete.
Right. Well, anyways, so we get a little like heart to heart between Stamets and Spock, and then we go back to like I said, they go beam down to the Section 31 base. They got gravity boots and they're in their environmental suits, which is cool. We get frozen blood.
Yes, but wasn't this also Arium's first away mission? There was a really cute moment between her and Detmer.
And last.
Right before, yeah. Too soon. No, there was a really nice moment. It was like, don't forget about us little people. You know, it's just like the friendship vibe was super strong in this episode. So right. That you kind of really felt something when it all went down.
Yeah,
for sure. And so they beam down and like we get the frozen blood. We get floating blood. And then we
floating
get
pigs in space.
Floating pigs in space. And this is where we get the popsicle admirals. We get the Tellarite, the Andorian, and we got Admiral Pitar. So when they.
And they've been frozen for 2 weeks. So every time we saw them this season, they were holograms.
And so.
Oh, good point.
And this was Section 31 control AI that was doing this, obviously.
Was it Section 31 AI, or was it the probe projecting what it wanted them to see?
It's definitely the Section 31 AI, but it seems like the probe is somehow tied into it, not the Temporal Cold War, unless the Temporal Cold War is tied into that. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to know for sure at this point.
Right. Anyway, so we get that. So Sarug brings up that he knows that the video of Admiral Pitar was a forgery, is a hologram, because the ultraviolet light shows that there's no changes whatsoever.
She's also a Vulcan. Vulcans usually supposed to be good at hiding that.
Yeah, but sure. They got to show a little bit. And then he brings out the video of Spock attacking the doctors and the orderlies or whatever you want to call them, security. And there's no ultraviolet there as well. So he's saying this has to be a doctored film. So Spock couldn't have done that. So then Cornwell's like, well, I guess it was doctored. So, sorry. Spoke out of turn. It'd be great if Pike turned to her and said, aren't you tired of being wrong?
She's wrong a lot.
Yeah.
We know now that Control is the one creating the evidence, and they're actually just fighting a freaking computer.
Right.
Is it Control, though, or is it this futuristic?
Right now it's definitely Control, but the futuristic thing may or may not be tied into it.
Well, there's no footprint that says it's Control.
Well, they said
it is Control.
Control wants to be able to think for themselves, and control knows that if they get all this data, based on the data they've already been fed, that if Control gets everything, they'll have enough information on artificial intelligence to become sentient.
It's like chicken or the egg.
Does that mean Control is in control of like everything coming from the future, and that's what's trying to wipe out humanity?
That's what they're trying to say, I think. It's a weird chicken or the egg thing. It's like Control had to exist in the future already for it to come back in time and
Factarium. It could be like S.H.I.E.L.D. It starts now, and then it goes up, and then things happen.
Yeah, I mean, S.H.I.E.L.D.
ended up having access because of Tyler.
Sure.
Tyler and the Admiral feeding things to Troll.
Yeah.
Eventually, Discovery's computer system was part of that network. And then when the Sphere downloaded all of its data and Tyler did his next upload, suddenly all that data went to the Sphere, from the Sphere went to...
I think the corruption is the... I think Tyler is innocent. I don't think he actually sent anything.
I don't think he did it on purpose.
No, I don't think he sent it at all. Arium, I think it was Arium.
Now, one thing I think it might be interesting, what if the future AI is trying to make Control sentient?
Well, the future AI is Control that is sentient, so it's like it's had to have already happened, even though it didn't happen in the first place yet. It's a weird time control thing, a time travel thing.
Well, I know, I'm just saying what comes first. So, anyways,
I'll be back.
I'm a beer and a half in right now, and I haven't really been drinking much recently, so it's blowing my mind.
Okay, mom's headed for our next whiskey, so
heck yeah.
Oh, okay. We're on our second. It's not our third. It's fine.
It's fine.
It's your 12th. It's fine. It's fine. You'll be fine.
I am actually drinking Star Trek beer, though.
Tell me about this.
This one wasn't so great, honestly. The best beer to come out of Schmaltz's wheelhouse by far, and I'm not saying this because I'm biased in the regard that you're going to think that I am. I drink
Klingon ale.
But their Klingon Porter, the Klingon Imperial Porter, was hands down actually the best beer that they've brewed in the Star Trek line. The other ones that they've brewed for it, this is the Symbiosis, which was for the 30th anniversary of Star Trek. They had one that was made for the 50th anniversary of the original series, that was like a 50th anniversary golden ale. And then they had one called Captain's Holiday, which they've served on the Star Trek cruise. And there was another one that I just had while I was on the Star Trek cruise this last time. I can't remember which one it was. They've just all been way too hoppy.
Do they have any reds?
No. They've all been these like overhopped golden ales, and except for that Imperial Porter. And they've all been kind of disappointing. So I'm drinking Star Trek beer just to get it out of my fridge. It makes me really sad to say that, because on the 25th, I'm going to a Girl Scout cookie and gear and beer pairing event. So,
oh, fun. I've heard of these.
Our guy does it. Our group does it right. I'll tell you about it after we're done. But
okay, sounds good.
Chicago Girl Scout cookie and beer pairing event is really good.
That's pretty freaking awesome.
Sounds great. Yeah. So where do we leave off?
They're on the beamed over to the station.
Oh yeah, the station. And, we get like sort of a regular one kind of moment where they're walking through and trying to discover everything when they bring the gravity back online. And this is where
Tilly discovers that Tilly might be trying to give the computer something.
Yeah, the Arium is trying to do something, and Tilly discovers that. And Arium attacks Nan and rips her implant off. And so she's choking.
We knew what's going to happen when she said,
"What are those for?"
That's good to know.
What are those for? Do those help you breathe by chance?
Oh, they'll come in useful later. And then we get this great fight between Burnham and Arium.
Crouching Tiger, Hidden Robot.
It was pretty cool.
It was a good fight.
Yeah, for a Star Trek fight, Pretty solid.
Go ahead and say it, Mom.
It was a cheap ass fight.
Yeah.
Aww. I disagree.
I mean, Miriam handed Burnham her butt, but that was no surprise. She's
cheap.
She's part robot.
I mean, the strength was there, but when you're a martial artist, you kind of can pick up on like the technique. And so the strength was there and it was cool. It looked cool, but it wasn't.
Michael's versed in Vulcan martial arts. Don't forget.
Which is skeletal. That's pinching and
skeletal.
You know, that's like pressure point. What? Pressure point martial arts.
She's not just a pressure. Different. She handed those three guys her, in the third episode. She handed them their asses. It's more than just pinching.
Miriam is cybernetically enhanced, so.
Very hard boobs.
And I remember that this isn't just Arium. This is Arium infected.
True. And like Dave said before, that Arium had sent over to the Section 31 computer the sphere's knowledge of all artificial intelligence collected over 100,000 years. Mm-hmm. So obviously he wants to learn about that. And
give me more, give me more.
Give me Seymour.
Or give me more.
They lock Arium into a room.
Yes, so she gets locked into an airlock, unfortunately. She's trying to get this whole Section 31 control information online so it can become fully sentient and take out everybody. And it says he wants to kill all life, basically. And this is where we get...
It's Bender. Kill all humans.
She's locked in the airlock, and Arium kind of comes back and through Tilly.
Tilly starts so wholesome,
sending her memories. Tilly, and like, because
Tilly
friends.
Realized, you know, that little tiny bit that Arium was like, "You need to stay with me." Once she was gone, Tilly started looking to see, wow, that was weird. Let me look into what Arium's been working on. And then she figured it out. So that's how what led her Tilly to, like, I think I can help, patch me into Arium. And then, yeah.
You saved every memory you ever had with me. I think that's because you adored me.
And I adore you too.
That's presumptuous.
Everyone adores Tilly. Let's just get it out there now.
This is true.
If you don't, you're a monster.
True.
It's a good thing I'm not a monster.
And so she's sending her memories, like, remember this, remember that, and Arium comes back on, you know, to her former self, and she's just telling
Michael, mentally there but physically not.
Yeah, right. You got to blow me out the airlock. There's no way, because if I once he takes control, I'm going to kill you.
As soon as I open this door, I'm going to kill you. Then pry the door shut. Use the phaser to melt it shut. Do something. Michael stands there the entire time.
Yeah. Yeah. And
she's emotionally compromised because she's a human.
Yes. And then.
Is she, though?
And then Arium tells that Control obviously wants to kill her and everything because of her. And then she says that she has to find out about Project Daedalus. And she's like, what's that? And then all of a sudden the airlock opens and Arium flies into space. And we find out that Nan got up and she said made the decision to blow her out the airlock.
The forgotten Nan.
Yes.
Really alive the whole time.
She's like, I never liked her anyways.
her stalking around finally made a difference. Good job, Nan.
Yeah.
And we kind of get that last shot as her going away, and we have the
her computer vision blinks out.
Yeah, we got the last line of like from their video of her and her husband saying, we're coming home.
And the credits were actually silent.
Yes.
If you made it past the preview for the next week, the credits were silent.
I thought I muted it for a moment, and then I realized they did that on purpose.
Mm.
I was crying. I you know, it's funny because I was kind of a little like the first time I watched it, I was like, and then the second time I watched it, knowing what was going to happen, I was actually a blubbering mess by the time it was over.
Yeah.
Aww. Nice. Jen, since you're our guest, what are your takeaways from Project Daedalus? What did you like, dislike?
Well, I'm ready to find out what the heck Project Daedalus is. All on board. Ready for more butt shots.
Of course.
Of course. I was really heartbroken to finally meet this character. I was really excited when they introduced her to us at the top. I was like, yes, all right. So, you know, like, Owo's had an episode, and now we're going to be getting an episode with this, with Aria. Oh, cool. Okay, she has a name, and all of, and then my heart was broken. And that to me was a kind of a Game of Thrones moment. We had this character that we didn't expect to die who ended up thrown out an airlock. So, you know, that's as close as you're going to get to incest and boobs.
I'll rebut that when it's my turn.
Rebut.
It's all about the
butt. Yeah, rebut it.
I will rebut it because I know you're partial to the butts. So I got to bring out the butts as much as I can tonight.
Things I didn't like. Oh, I don't know. I'm just along for the ride that Star Trek Discovery is taking me on. I try not to quibble too hard because, you know, I just want more Star Trek. Yeah. That's what it comes down to. I leave the quibbling to those of you who have podcasts on the radio.
There you go. We'll let you do the singing and we'll do the quibbling.
We are quite the quibblers.
Not I.
Oh, you're the worst.
You say that now.
I'm the worst, huh?
I'm joking. You always want to like move on when I say something about boobs. I mean, come on.
She's like, moving on.
Well, that was this time.
Anything else?
Anything
else you want to bring up?
I don't know. I'm definitely looking forward. I'm glad that that Culber is back. You know, there was definitely a sort of bury your gaze thing that was going on with that, which is a pretty common trope in TV. And so it was nice that he made a return. I don't know if that was because of fan anger at yet another gay man and gay character getting killed. But I was glad to see him back. I think his story arc will be interesting. So I'm looking forward to more of that. And I have been pretty good about avoiding reading a lot about the show. I try not to let the internet into my brain too much when it comes to theories and things of that nature. So I very much am kind of along for the ride, but I did enjoy some of the things we discussed about this evening. So I'll be keeping an eye out for more clues.
Cool. Holly.
Hey. Okay. So I'm really glad we got a background for Arium.
Yes. I know you've been waiting for this.
It's funny because until two episodes ago, I had kept that to myself. How much I loved her character. I just kind of kept it to myself. And then the whole thing happened and I was like, okay, now I get to talk about this.
Yeah.
And then we have this.
And then
your heart's ripped out.
I really, the only, like, directorial-wise, I guess, I really disliked the pacing when, like, the tri-dot would appear in Arium's eye. I felt like they spent a lot of time on that. Like, it was very bum, bum, bum. I didn't like that. And obviously I'm like super bummed to see her go, but I think that, I mean, granted the whole episode is like a catalyst to let her go, but like, I think they said goodbye well by giving us the human side of her character in the beginning of the episode. So it sucks, but I'm thankful that, I mean, they probably did it for many reasons. One of the reasons is they kind of need you to feel something before they kill somebody off, but I really liked getting to understand her before she died. So that was nice. Other than Arium, well, kind of alongside Arium, we were talking earlier about the AIs and the growth of artificial intelligence. And you guys know how I felt about the Trek shorts. And I feel like maybe this episode kind of pulls Calypso in because it kind of makes me feel like that episode was foreshadowing of the AI adaptation for this season. So, like, we're looking at tech from so far in the future, and we were all like, well, it didn't make sense because the ship was talking and blah, 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 and it's only been 1,000 years. How can it only have been 1,000 years and blah, blah, blah? So I think that that AI adaptation from this episode is, like really, we can pull from Calypso and make sense of it and possibly predict what's going to happen next, but I don't really have a prediction for you. No,
I did not read the article. I only read like the headline of it, and it's going to, I don't know if I'm even going to be able to find it again, mm-hmm. but I read something that was like, is the character and I always think of him from, where is my brain right now? My brain is two beers gone.
Two beers.
Nook Nook Motherfucker!
The guy who was in the Star Trek short, Calypso?
Calypso.
I always picture him from, I don't think it's the same actor, but I always pictured him from like the Two Towers actor.
Yeah, Aldous Hodge. He was in Leverage.
Okay.
So there was a thing about him and tying him in, and is he the Red Angel?
Mm. Perhaps. We don't know.
Possibly.
I don't know. That's a good thought. I think that the Red Angel is a little too feminine to be such a man.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I still think Michael could become the Red Angel. I still think it makes sense, especially since the very first episode, her narration just kicked off that whole thought for me. So I don't know. I really do. I think after this week, I think I'm just going to watch every single episode of this season and see if I feel any differently.
Yeah.
Because I do. I still think she could be the Red Angel. I know I've said, oh, what if it's Arium? Because it's like an advanced exosuit and blah, blah, blah. But I still think it could be Michael. Yeah.
It seems like it to me. We were talking about how just our discussion with the argument between Spock and Burnham. It seems like maybe Spock knows, because he did mind meld with the Red Angel for a moment, and he did get a little reflection. Maybe he did realize this might be Michael and that he has to push her to do something.
Yeah.
Maybe Spock's kind of playing on her emotion.
Is he upset that the angel chose Michael and not Spock?
You jerk.
Yeah. But the only other thing I had to say about like this, I loved the vibes I got from seeing the bridge officers in their leisure time, you know, acting as girlfriends, you know, talking about playing games together. It gave me, I wouldn't say Lower Deck vibes because we haven't had any Lower Decks yet, but it made me hopeful for Lower Decks.
Yes. I know.
So I loved seeing the friendship and camaraderie and, you know, just personality. It was great to see some personality in these characters. And, you know, I don't remember the pilot's names.
Detmer.
And what's the other girl's name?
Joanna.
Oh, whoa.
What are their designated jobs?
Detmer is
the one is the pilot and the other is
navigation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so they're a team, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So I just loved seeing them not on the bridge. I thought that was awesome. You know, we've seen random characters in the mess hall, or I don't know what you guys call
food room.
Food room.
Food facilities.
Cafeteria.
Cafeteria. You know, like I loved seeing them just not so serious and just taking orders from Pike. And then again, I love Pike, so mm-hmm. I didn't like, obviously, knowing what we know about Cornwell, I wasn't excited about how quick he was to just do whatever the Admiral said. But she is an Admiral, and I get it. But I think he got played.
There were some moments where I was wondering when they were going to go in the minefields. Like, you trust her?
Right? Because he's been so, I think I mentioned this last, like 2 weeks ago, he's been so observant of everything. Yeah. He picks up on everything, even things that we weren't sure we picked up on. And then he calls it out. We're like, you know, I thought that seemed funny, but yeah. He didn't pick up on this. And it's really, I hope that maybe he knew, but he was curious and decided to go anyway. I don't know.
It's interesting. Absolutely.
How about you, Aaron?
A couple things. I got to get my beef out. The Vulcans with the emotions. Unless Spock's doing this for a reason, which, you know, if he's doing that to, you know, basically amp Michael up to do something, I'm on board. But if this is just him not knowing his way and trying to figure out his human self, I'm like, oh, can we please stop? I mean, it's just like, I didn't like it when we saw it Into Darkness when he's, you know, beating the crap out of Khan, you know, it goes against
the nature of Vulcan.
Half human.
I know. But it's just like he had that under wraps when we see him in the original series and in the movies. Yes, he does get emotional sometimes. Not that he doesn't ever get emotional, but I don't know. It frustrates me a little bit. So, I mean, because we saw Sarek get emotional too at one point, even in season one,
I remarked on how oddly emotional the Vulcans were, and it was like, this is Star Trek, right? Like, why are I don't know.
Yeah, and it frustrates
me. I need to crack that open again. But,
yeah, I know. Yeah. Yeah, I know. It just it gets me a little upset. But but there's some great parts to it. I love the idea that if, and we brought this up, I didn't think about this before, just the talking about it, like, is the artificial intelligence influencing the future, trying to go into the future, or is that future artificial intelligence trying to awaken control from Section 31 to become sentient?
It's Terminator syndrome.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it could be anything. So that's interesting. And Project Daedalus has got to be the worst name of a project. I mean, because Daedalus is like supposed to be this genius Greek in Greek mythology who makes the maze they put the Minotaur in that Theseus has to go after. And then because he's the only one knows his way out of the maze, the king who had him build it, King Midas, puts him up in a tower, and him and his son try to escape with wax wings, and Icarus crashes down because he gets too close to the sun. So things don't work out for Daedalus. So why would you name anything Project Daedalus? He kind of makes some pretty monstrous mistakes. Risky project that could really not work well for you. So
since they're counting on it to fail, Michael has nothing. She doesn't need to do anything about it. It'll just fall apart on its own.
It's okay. It's fine.
You're such a cynic, Dave.
I'm a realist. I love the mind sequence. I thought that was really cool. I love blackout minds. That was a really neat idea. A lot of cool little stuff there. It's a great episode. I really enjoyed it. There's really not anything besides the Spock emotion. And the Spock with the Culber thing, that didn't add up to me, but I'm going to give that a pass just because of writing. Mm. You know, I think Tilly could have, or anybody else could have made that a suggestion.
Remark.
So, yeah, and it would have been a little more believable. But yeah, that's me. Dave.
So for this one, two episodes ago when Holly said she's like so excited to learn about Arium, and I basically said she's been infected, they're probably going to kill her. And then they did, and then the episode they decide to kill her, then they decide to give her a backstory. So for me, this episode did nothing for me but annoy me, because it was just, I predicted it and it came true, and it was just like, but
did you hate that you predicted it, or did you hate that they gave her a backstory and then killed her?
It's too little too late. Like, if you wanted me to care about the character, build her up first. Don't kill her the same episode you're trying to make me care about her, because it's just – it's too rushed that way. I feel like it's really sloppy storytelling to like only talk about the character and tell us about anything about them the episode they decide to kill him. It just it I don't know. It just – I knew it was coming. I felt it was coming, and I knew they were going to give her character on the episode they decided to kill her, and it just was like – I mean, it just didn't surprise me, and I think that's what kind of bummed me out. And it's like, well, you're going to – and there's so many ways they could have stopped her. They could have, like, tried to seal the door with a phaser, you know, set it to overload. Maybe the overload could have melted part of it, something, anything. But Michael just stood there looking with her mouth open, and I was just frustrated to no end. Just that they didn't.
Yeah,
go ahead.
No, could I? So when they have like the Next Generation episode, Lower Decks, when the girl she dies, when you find out, you know, she goes on that mission, and she, her name's trying to find it, Sito or Sato.
Well, that was great. That she wasn't a character we ever saw before. So Lower Decks was great because they gave us a new character. They built her up. They made you care about her. Then they killed her. It was well done.
What's the difference between that and Arium?
Because we've seen Arium for two seasons, and we didn't know shit about her until today.
Oh, okay, but
I mean, it just—I mean, it doesn't. It just, you know, it's a character. She's window dressing. She's been window dressing for two seasons or one and a half seasons, and then you kill her. I'm like, well,
I loved her, everything she did, but. I'm sorry. I'm just saying.
I know you did, but like she didn't do anything for me because she didn't do anything. She was just window dressing. She was there. She looked cool, but I mean, we didn't know anything about her. Like we didn't even know until this episode.
That's how you saw her. It makes me sad.
But most of the characters in season one were window dressing, except for like the couple that had lines. I mean, sure, she got a little bit more lines, and the bridge crew's got a little bit more lines. But lines don't give you backstory.
Don't make the character either.
But they tell us about the character, or they can if they're the right kind of lines. Because today she got all the lines where we learned about her, or like they showed, not tell. They showed the wedding thing. They talked a little bit about she's a cybernetic human. Because we didn't know any of that until Thursday. So
true.
I don't know. It just.
I agree in some
aspects.
They're
trying to make me care. But they're trying to make me care too late. I should have been more invested in this character before they decided to kill them. And they're just trying to cram it into this episode and then kill them. I mean, with the Lower Decks, it was beautiful because it was new. It was a new person. We'd never seen him before. Learning about them. Oh, that's this cool. And this is someone we should have learned about last season. You know what I mean? Something. If she's always there on the bridge, can't we learn something about them? And
I guess they killed her.
So it's too little too late.
I agree in some ways and disagree. I mean, I think that they could have peppered her story in a little bit within like a couple episodes. And I think we would have been like, oh, my God.
Exactly. And, they could have dropped a couple of these little things earlier. And storytelling would have been on point.
Can't have everything you want, Dave.
And what? And then – and you can't have everything you want, she said. And then
not with Discovery, no.
And then Lower Decks was sort of a different animal all by itself because they totally took the main characters out of the equation other than putting them in the background and it was refreshing.
Lower Decks was beautifully done, and Star Trek Discovery is still the Michael Burnham show. It's not the ensemble show that Star Trek should be.
I agree in some ways. Yeah.
That's my major beef. It just didn't surprise me. I mean, after last week too, it was the most cliche.
Lower Decks is Short Treks. Lower Decks, Short Treks. Lower Decks hasn't come out yet, I thought.
We're referring to the next generation episode.
Gotcha. Sorry.
Yeah, that's okay. Yeah, no,
for a moment,
too,
I was like, did I miss that?
No.
But then I was
like,
oh, I know what they're talking about.
Yeah. I mean, Lower Decks was beautifully done. And this was trying to be Lower Decks, and it failed, I think, because it was just – it was telegraphed. I mean, we saw her get infected two episodes ago. She's been doing shady stuff. She's partly computer, all computer. We didn't know until today. Okay, well, she's going to get killed because they're going to have to do that to stop her.
But
because she's Terminator. You got to kill it to stop it.
They did pay attention to her enough in every episode that piqued my interest. So directing-wise and show-wise, like, they were paying attention to Arium enough to show – some kind of interest or curiosity. Whether that's what you were looking for or needing, I don't know, but I feel like they at least tried to give the dog a bone.
No, not until today. I mean, they gave her, I mean, she had lines, but she wasn't doing anything. Like, I mean, we didn't know anything about her. Like, to care, I feel like you have to know about it. Like, Captain Marvel, like, just came out, has the exact
same... Don't you dare.
Well, I don't think the movie's bad. I think it's a good movie. I just have a hard time caring about the character because she didn't even know who she was. So, okay. Like,
when I haven't seen the movie yet. I read the comics, so I don't know. So,
I don't know. But it just, I mean, like, you know.
Not related to Star Trek.
No, but I'm just saying, like, I'm just explaining the way I view characters. When the character doesn't know who they are, I have a hard time caring. And if the show doesn't tell me who the character is, I have a hard time caring. And when they telegraphed her death, since she was getting taken over, it just, I had a hard time caring. So that's, yeah. I get it.
I don't necessarily agree 100%. I think there's some points to it. I still think it was a well done episode, and to introduce her character, I wish they would have introduced her character sooner. But
it would have way more impact to me if they would have introduced her sooner.
It would have detracted from the storyline to talk about it sooner, though.
No, it wouldn't. It would have served the story instead of being a disservice like this episode was.
So much. Look, everybody was waiting to find Spock. We want Spock. We want Spock. We want Spock. If you got all these other little peon stories in the midst of wanting Spock, you would have been pissed. Pissed.
They could have dropped the Culber stuff. That's been a waste of time.
He's pissed now, so what's the difference?
He's pissed now.
I don't know. I think I still think it was a good episode, and Arium is a great character. I was sad to see her go. I think Dave's right. It would have had a way more impact if we had a little more like build up to her character, even in like peppered through the episodes. But you know, they don't really put a lot of time into any of the other characters, and we've been saying, you know, we want to see more Detmer, we want to see Arium, we want to see Joanna. And Bryce and all these other characters.
It was the ensemble show that Star Trek has always been in the past.
I mean, even like, you know, Next Gen, it would have, you know, Barclay walk on once in a while and make a goofy line or something like that.
Or O'Brien,
you know, wouldn't have to be a full episode about them. But we just got like, okay, we know what this character is a little bit about. So
absolutely.
But anyway,
yeah. So I think that's it for Project Daedalus. Jen, tell us.
Something before you say bye to Jen? I know, Jen, you got to go. But Jen, you were talking about Culber earlier.
Yes.
And it's just been bothering me how Stamets has been so blind to what the fuck has been going on with him.
Yes. No, I agree. I absolutely agree. You don't bring somebody back from the actual dead and then just expect them to be like, cool.
Fine with it. Yeah.
I mean, has no one watched Buffy?
Yeah. No, I have not.
This does not go well. This does not go well. Now, granted,
archive footage deleted.
Heaven, but yeah.
I didn't say that, but yeah.
Just saying.
Yeah.
Just saying.
All right. Well, Jen, where can we find you online? We mentioned it up at the top, but are there any other places we can find you online?
KlingonPopWarrior.com. I'm on iTunes. I'm on Google. I'm on Bandcamp. I am on Facebook, .com/KlingonPopWarrior when it's not experiencing insane outages. I'm on Twitter, at KlingonPop. You can find me. I'm chatty.
Cool.
Awesome. Yeah, she's great. We talk, and you even started a group for people who are looking to lose weight in the kind of the geek group. So in the geek fandom on Facebook, so that's been really nice to have encouragement.
It's quiet. It's just a handful of friends right now, but you know, we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, awesome. Very nice.
I just fixed my treadmill, so I get to run again.
Woo.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, the show you can find online at syntholics.com. You can email us at syntholics@yahoo.com. You can check out the Facebook group at facebook.com/group/syntholics. You can check out the YouTube channel at youtube.com/syntholics. On Twitter, you can follow me personally at David_J_Duncan. Aaron's at Blackbird2004. Holly's at Lunar Thistle. And the show's at Syntholic Duo. Holly has a website you'd like to, you should look at.
Let me swallow my Jameson.
get that voice going.
My website is Holly Michelle V. Just kidding. HollyMichelleV.wixsite.com/voiceover.
All right. Very cool. And please go onto our Apple iTunes and rate and view Synthaholics. Give us 5 stars. Say nice things about us there and let other people know about us. Also, if you could go to our Patreon, patreon.com/Synthaholics, throw us a buck or more if you can. It's a great way to support the show. It helps us buy and fix old equipment that always seems to be breaking nowadays. And lastly, as we always say, a great way to help out the show is just to share the show when you see it come up in your social media, or tell your friend, tell your coworker, let them know that we're around and a fun podcast to listen to. And we get to have great people like Jen come on and share her experiences and what's going on in her world as well.
Absolutely. And Holly's mom.
And Holly's mom.
Well, thank you both for joining us. And thanks, Aaron and Holly. It's always great to talk with you guys.
Very cool.
Klingon mach tak judge.
No able. How do you say no speak Klingon in Klingon?
Klingon cho vajatbe.
Klingon cho vajatbe.
Sounds like you're talking about your vagina.
Yeah. Let's do it. All right. Well, thank you.
Mom.
A couple right. whiskeys in.
Well, thank you all so much for listening. Live long and prosper, one and all. St. Patrick's Day vaginas. Have a good day.
Yes.
Before the night's over, I'll puke in the sink, and we'll cry till we laugh, and we'll both shit our pants. You're the best drinking friend I ever had.
Okay, I'm going to the bathroom now.
Thanks, right. Thanks, Jen, for joining us. That was great.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, Jen.
Good night.
Bye, Jen. Yeah,
later.
That's hilarious. That's all right.
You guys are out of control.
Oh, yeah. That's how we roll.
I guess.
Oh, my gosh. You guys, I've been laughing so hard. Spine hurts like this. The muscles
in your, in your spine
that are keeping my spine erect.
You said erect.